it's time for real fashion on Pop Off with Harry Jane Pop.
We're starting out the week right. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here, and welcome to Pop Off. Yes, it is going to be a very positive week, and it's going to be a week that we are going to make some differences in lives. And isn't that what the whole idea of life is all about? If we can't make a difference, if we can't change people's lives, if we can't introduce the spiritual part of your being into life, then you know what? I wonder if it's all worth it. Seriously. And we've got some great guests today. As a matter of fact, is America in its final stages? Now, this one is really, it's kind of scary in a way, but it's also something we really, really need to think about seriously. Because, you know, remember the fall of the Roman Empire? Is that where America is? And has it been because we've become spiritually bankrupt? And if we are, what can we do to turn it around, if there is anything? Also, you're going to hear the real story on Pop Off about divorce. You know, what causes divorce? Why is it the divorce rate is huge? I mean, it's like, you know, 50, you got a 50-50 chance to be able to make it in divorce today. Well, we've got the secrets from a gal who has her own column. She's nationally syndicated. She's been on all the major shows, and she gives as much advice as she possibly can. And then, are you ready for this? This one's going to blow you away. I'm serious about this. Dying was the best thing that ever happened to me. That's what this doctor, he is a traditional doctor, and he said he learned more from his dying patients as to what life is all about than anyone else. This is truly an inspirational story. It is inspiration to the hilt on Pop Off. That's what we do, including giving you some fair warning as to what is going to be happening for this very, very hot week. Oh, by the way, if you are having a heat spell, wherever you are, on the West Coast, we are just sizzling. We've been, like, record-breaking over 100-degree days. Thank your public works people. I was out for my walk very early this morning because it's so doggone hot. It's going to be 100. It was 111 yesterday, going to be 109 today. And for those of you back east, I know even in the 90s it's bad because you've got heavy humidity. But thank these guys. The guy told me on Saturday that he was out trying to do repairs. They've got like 500 crews out because we've got some power outages and they didn't want to have any major problems. The guy was up like, I don't know, what, 30, 40 feet on one of the poles trying to work things out and get the electricity back on. He said he was sweating so badly by 11 o'clock on Saturday that the sweat acted as a conductor and the electricity went through his body, and he said, this is it, I think I have to stop.
Put on
so, I mean, you know, when you see these guys, I know it drives you crazy when you have a power outage and you got to sit and it's terrible heat and it's miserable, but you know what? It's even more miserable for them, and they are trying their best. So pat them on the back. I told them, be well, take care, God bless, you know, and don't do something that you shouldn't be doing because, you know, we do want to have our electricity. We want to be safe and all that, but you got to take care of yourself, too. So pat them on the back. We don't give them enough pat on the back. We really, really don't. Okay, what's going to be in this week? Is it going to be a good week, a bad week? You know, something we have to be aware of. The accident's going to be prone out there. It seems like the world's blowing up around our ears, but maybe we can make some sense of it. Well, we'll always try on Monday. And we are going to talk, of course, with the lady who makes all that difference for us. Of course, none other than our very, very, very own special lady. And that is Esther Baer. She does it just for the numbers. She's got all our numbers. Hey, Esther, how goes it?
Pretty good. How you be today?
Well, you know, I'm fine. It's warm and everything, but, you know, we can manage.
As long as you're staying in deep and cool, this is okay.
Absolutely. So give me the idea. What's going to be happening this week?
Well, this if people have to stay close to home, this is a good time this whole week to do something new in your house, to remodel, to change, rearrange, figure out new serving energy.
Yeah.
This is a good week for that. So this is stay close to home and do something different in your home. And as far as the work week, Tuesday and, let's see, Friday and Sunday's iffy, but those first 2 days are really bad for accidents.
Really?
So, yeah, and if we have real warm like Tuesday, it's still supposed to be pretty hot,
mm-hmm.
People are going to get very, very stressed, and they're going to be in a hurry to get home and get out of the heat, and accidents are going to be humongous. It's also a day to make sure your car is running good. It's not overheating, because that's going to frustrate you even more. So there can be a lot of mechanical problems on Tuesday.
Yeah, and also drink lots of liquid.
Oh, the whole week.
Be careful out there. I mean, you know, I've talked to people that have gotten a little bit of heat stroke. You've got to be careful.
Yeah, this week health-related problems have to do with the top part of your body. So, you know, your head, your shoulders, your face, sinuses, respiratory problems, chest, upper, inside and out, anything from your stomach up. Those are things you have to watch out for. So make sure you have the, you know, the sunblock for your face if you're out a lot. The water is mandatory. I run around with a sprayer, water sprayer.
Right.
And I spray constantly on my face to make sure I stay cool with a little fan on it. Works wonderful. So
and
those,
be safe out
everywhere.
There with your kids and your pets. Bring your pets in. Make sure you don't put your kids in the car and lock the car and run into Costco for a couple of minutes. Because it ain't going to be pretty when you come back out.
It's cooler inside than it is outside. There is no cool place outside. Even in the shade, it's still hot.
Well, people leave their kids in a car locked up, or even their pets in a car. That's ridiculous.
One of my problems, I think people like that should be shot.
They're not using their common sense at all, and God forbid, I mean, these people, you know, their children have died, pets have died. Don't do this.
Oh, yeah, and the animals, you know, I mean, you figure they're running around in fur coats all the time. So, you know, they're a lot warmer than we are anyway. So, you know, you just can't crack a window and go inside and leave your dog in the car for an hour. It just doesn't work.
Now, what about accident-prone days? Any special days we should look out for?
The biggie is Friday.
Friday.
That's our worst day. Wednesday, people are going to be running around in a hurry. Tuesday, like I said, they're going to be stressed. But Wednesday, they're going to want to start going fast again. So that's, you know, fender bender day.
Okay, how about business?
Pardon?
How about business?
Oh, business? Today's a good day for business.
Okay.
This is a good verbal day if you need to communicate with your bosses or if you have a problem. This is a good day to do it. Wednesday's a real good day for printed matter. So if you have to write things, reports or whatever, that's a good day to put things in writing. Thursday's a good luck day for just about anything. And Saturday's a good business day. That's a good take control day. So if you have to do any kind of money situations or if you're working on Saturday, that's a good day to have your control.
Okay, super.
Wonderful day.
And what about good luck? I mean, if we want to try a little bit of a lottery, maybe?
Oh, our gamble days are today, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, even though we're accident prone, Friday's a good intuitive day. So if it feels good, you know, you just get that urge to drive by that 7-Eleven or whatever, go get your ticket.
Okay.
You know, if it feels good, do it. That's an intuitive day, so pay attention to your inner feelings.
You know, I think we need to do more of that. We don't listen to what our inside says to us, and that's the one that can get us in trouble if we don't.
Oh, you betcha. That's the one that keeps you out of trouble. It's the logic that will kill you every time. So when you get those gut feelings, you know, don't ask questions. You just go with it.
Got it.
They always work. Those are the ones that keep us alive and keep us healthy.
Other than wearing light colors, because it's so doggone hot out there, are there any colors that are going to give us a positive feel this week?
This week is all golds, yellows, and bronze.
Okay.
Even though it's a high-energy color and it's a warm color, if you do the very soft pastels, it won't be as hot. So, you know, the butter yellows, the soft colors.
Soft, great.
But those are good. They keep your mind mentally alert, keep your brain working real good, which is real hard to do when it's too hot to think.
Yeah, your brain gets fried.
Oh, you betcha. But yellow is... Excuse me, yellow is a mental color, so it keeps your brain working good. It also works on upper respiratory problems, so people having problems breathing or allergies, yellow pulls all that stuff out of your system.
Fantastic.
So that's a good color to wear this week.
Well, you have yourself a good week this week, too, and if people want to get a hold of you for personal readings or even pet readings, how do they do that?
They can call me at 916-427-8727.
Fantastic. Okay, you take good care and you have yourself a good week. Keep cool.
Oh, you do. And you stay in and keep cool.
Dynamite, doll. Take
care. Bye-bye, sweetie.
It's your week. Use it well on Pop-Off, as we all try to do. Okay, coming up, can dying be a lesson about living? I am telling you, this next guest, I've talked with Dr. Habuzo before, and he is absolutely extraordinary. This man can tell us, because of his patience, what it's like to be alive and how to incorporate real life into every day instead of, well, you know, the complaints and I can't do this and I can't do that. Get off your duff and make a difference. That's what we're going to do on Pop Off. Oh, boy. Who lives? Who dies? You know, there are three critical factors that can make the difference. And wait till you hear what the difference is all about. I'm serious. Dr. William Heblitzel has cared for patients in hospitals, ambulances, you name it, where there is sadness and suffering, he's been there, from firefighter, paramedic to physician. Now, Dr. H is author of a book called Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. And he says there are universal lessons that we can all learn. Hope and inspiration is what it's all about. Dr. Heblitzel, nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Absolutely. You know, people will say dying is the best thing that ever happened to me. You got to explain to them the concept behind this whole thing.
Well, the title sort of grabs your attention, but it's one of many lessons that comes from patients that have entered my life and entered my my career. And I chose that particular lesson as a title because it sort of really gets our attention. There's one thing that all of us share in our journey, and that's death. And most of us fear death. And so it gets our attention. There was a gentleman early in my profession, in my career, that came into my office who was a very successful man in our community. He was well known. He was at the top of his game professionally and socially. And probably one of the most successful men I had ever met. I had always equated success with happiness. So I figured this must also be the happiest man I've ever met, but I was never really sure. He smiled, but it was a professional practice smile. And I just had the feeling that the man wasn't happy.
Uh-huh.
A few years ago, he began experiencing some strange sensations in his chest. These were not complaints of pain or discomfort. Something was there that just wasn't there before. He thought it was indigestion, maybe some reflux, and began taking antacids. And he carried antacids with him wherever he went. They were in his car, his office, his home, his study. His family was alarmed. His friends worried about him. They all wanted him to see his doctor, but he refused because he knew what it was. He'd take care of it. You know, it was a guy thing.
Yeah, right.
Well, one day he was sitting in the meeting and again experienced this now very familiar sensation in his chest. But this time, even though he had experienced it hundreds, maybe thousands of times before, got up, left the meeting early, he never did that, walked out to his car, drove across town, parked in a parking garage, walked to the hospital, stood in a long line in the emergency department to be registered as a patient. When it became his turn to be registered, he stood in front of the registration clerk, pointed to his chest and said, "I think there's something wrong with my heart." In that instant, he fell across her desk and died.
Oh, my God.
He was carried back into a trauma room, and sure enough, he was breathless, he was pulseless, he was dead. 10 minutes later, he had been resuscitated.
Uh-huh.
3 days later, he left the hospital with an implantable defibrillator in his chest. 1 week later, this man was standing in my office, and when I walked into the examination room, he was smiling, and there was no doubt in my mind that I was looking at a happy man.
Completely different than the one before.
Completely different. And he looked at me, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Dying was the best thing that ever happened to me."
That's amazing. You know, one thing that you have said, and you have alluded to this, you also say it in your book, you say, "Life happens now, not lost in yesterday or misspent waiting for tomorrow." What a wonderful lesson that is.
That is one of the most powerful lessons that my teachers have taught me. Teachers, not the teachers of medical school and my colleagues in residency, but the teachers that really taught me the most about medicine and healing are the patients that walk through my door. And there's an ancient Asian proverb that says, "When the student is ready, the teacher will appear." And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
These teachers have been in front of me for my entire career, but it's only when I was aware of their presence or willing to look for those lessons that I could see them. And fantastic lessons they are. And the lessons that the human being can experience during times of trial, be it challenge at home or at work or illness, cancer, or even death, can bring us, you know, profound growth as human beings and incredible lessons of how we can live our life and how we can find happiness. And that's what the book's about.
Well, these are, and these are universal lessons. These are not only private, but universal, the things that cross every border, every ethnic group, every political group, makes no difference, right?
They are indeed universal. And the amazing thing of it is that we can pick up many of the quotations that I sprinkle throughout the book speak of these lessons. And many of these quotations come from people that described them centuries ago. So we can actually learn and learn great wisdom that was written thousands of years ago that's just as important today as it was then.
Amazing.
And will be just as important in hundreds of years from now.
You say that there are three critical factors that makes a difference about who lives and who dies. What are those three critical factors?
Of who lives and who dies?
Right. What makes the difference in a person's life?
There are, I think there's probably more than three if we'd actually list them. But there are three big ones. One is, you alluded to it, is the importance of now. Life does occur now. It will always be now. How many times have we encountered people that tell us that when they retire, they're going to travel and have fun?
Yeah, it's always tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow.
I see it every day in the office. And then they retire and have their heart attack, have a horrible diagnosis, get hit by a car, and what they've lived their life for planning never comes about.
Right.
I see the opposite, too, where people will come and tell me that if they had only had that job a couple years ago, they'd be happy now. If mom and dad had left them money in their estate, he'd be financially secure now and would be happy now. Well, just as we can live our life in the future, we can live our life in the past, and both extremes take our attention and our energy away from now, which is the only thing we have. Happiness happens now.
And, you know, as a result of that, now this is my big fat opinion, so please tell me if you think I'm wrong. But when you do that, when you're thinking about, oh, my God, what did I do yesterday? It was bad. Something was a problem. Or I'm thinking about, well, what am I going to do tomorrow? How am I going to handle tomorrow? You take all the energy, the life force from today.
Exactly. You are absolutely right.
And that's sad. I mean, but we're not taught any other way. We're brought up always to say, well, we got to get that career. We got to get that house. We got to get that car. Instead of thinking, what is inside of us that makes us happy?
I think that's very insightful what you mentioned. We taught that. Because indeed, we look at these pictures on television of these horrible times and these challenges, and look at children that are happy. There can be children sitting in the middle of a war zone and be playing with something and have smiles on their faces.
Exactly.
I think we are brought into this world, and as children, I think we are universally happy. Something happens as we are raised that we are sort of taught how to behave, what our expectations are, and we stop being happy. And we spend the rest of our life learning what we knew as children of how to find happiness and meaning in our life.
But you know what? I don't want people sitting on their duffs and witching and moaning about, well, you know, that's the way I was brought up, so I'm going to blame my parents, I'm going to blame my teachers, I'm going to stop the blame game and move on with life, because it is in your power.
Indeed, and that is the importance of living in the now, that those of us that have some problem in our past that we focus upon, and it's widespread, what we've done, we've become a victim.
Yes.
And if there's something in our past that's responsible for a problem in our present, well, then we're waiting for something in our past to fix itself.
Right.
And if we're waiting, if something or someone's caused our problems, then that means someone else is responsible for fixing it. We don't have that ability. We don't have that responsibility. And then it's never going to get fixed.
You darn right. So take that power back. Stop allowing yourself to be a victim.
I agree.
Fantastic. Now, the book itself, Dying, was the best thing that ever happened to me. I assume it's available at all the bookstores, Amazon, that whole thing, right?
It's available widespread. It's online. There is a website.
Yeah.
DyingWasTheBestThing.com that your listeners can have the first chapter of the book emailed to them, and they can read an inspiring lesson about a man named Roger, who was a great teacher of mine, and they can start healing their lives just in one chapter.
Fantastic. Keep up the good work, Dr. Hablitzo. You know, unless we keep hammering at people and keep saying, yes, you can, it will not make a difference because people will still fall back into old ways, and we're just not going to let them.
I think you're absolutely correct.
Fantastic. And thank you so much for joining us today. Please come back anytime. Your inspiration is necessary.
Thank you so much.
Take care now. Bye-bye. That's Dr. William Hablitzo, H-A-B-L-I-T-Z-E-L. And again, the website is dyingwasthebestthing.com, and you can download a chapter, which I think is great. The book is, it really is inspiration. That's what inspiration is all about. It's being able to take on what you think is impossible and make it possible. But you have to believe. You have to want. You have to have that drive. If you have that drive, you can make anything happen. I'm telling you right now, you can make a difference, not only in your life, but people around you. Once they see that you can do it, it passes it on to they can do it. And you've done something incredibly phenomenal. You've not only succeeded yourself and are happy, but you pass it on. It's like the pay it forward thing. You got to pay it forward. We're always looking ahead. It makes life worth living on Pop-Off. And talking about living, are we in the final phase of the empire? You know, what is happening to America? Are we just throwing away our values? Are we throwing away our spiritual lines? Are we throwing away our beliefs? And is it coming to the end? Well, we're going to find out on Pop-Off. This is one you do not want to miss.
Be a morning after. We're moving closer.
You know, there is always a morning after. There's always hope when you really put out that feeling, that positive thing about hope. That's the problem that we have, I think, in our society today. We don't even try. It's sort of like, well, if it doesn't come to me, if it isn't a major success immediately, you know, we never look down the line and say, hey, what's going to happen a year from now or 5 years from now? I think other societies do that much, much more and much deeper than we do. Unfortunately, you know, the one thing we do is we hold on to what's happening this very, very minute. And you know what? You got to let go of something that is today and something that is not working if you want to make a major difference in anybody's life, especially your own. You've got to make that change, but you have to also, I'm telling you, you got to make a change on your own, but I'll tell you. We're going to keep trying to get a hold of Morris Berman. I think he was the one that he wrote a book called Dark Ages America. And it is just an incredible story that he tells. If we can't get him today, we will get him tomorrow. But the story is basically this. You know, we talk about the fall of the Roman Empire and what happened with rampant materialism and corporate gluttony. And he has this book that is called Dark Ages America, and it says that we've actually entered that age of darkness, you know, and we are on the verge of collapse from misguided foreign policy, disappearance of democratic ideas, propaganda machine that's done away with the truth. You know, doesn't it bother you? I mean, that the whole world is blowing up around us, and we keep getting, excuse my language, sucked into it. You know, please send somebody over, make a difference, put them around a table. You know, most of these people have hated each other for so many thousands of years. How are you going to make a change in their life in one moment? You know, and I don't care if it's weeks or months or years. Those weeks, months, and years are just a moment in time. That's the whole thing. It's a one fraction. It's like a pebble on the beach, and it takes a lot more than that than trying to make any difference in life. But keep trying. Keep hanging in there. That's what life is all about, is trying to make a difference. And also making a difference in anything that you have as far as what your life is all about. Remember, starts with one person at a time. And if you make the change, they can make the change. And if they see that you're happy, I mean, again, what is the word happiness? Does happiness mean to you you've got to have a lot of money in the bank? You got to have a big career? Or is it going to be peace, peace of spirit, peace of mind, peace that starts from the inside out? And if you don't do that, if you don't find that peace, nothing material will make a difference to you. I am telling you that really, truly, simply because I've known so many people in my life. And I've done, you know, radio and talk, for, 30-some years. And I've talked to people who are super, super rich. They have everything. Well, you think they have everything. But do they? Are they rich in spirit? Are they rich in soul? Are they rich in whatever is in life that can make a difference to other people? The answer to most of that is no. And when you say no to that, then I don't really think you're rich at all. You really are not. The richness comes from the inside out, from a spirit that says, you know, life is making a difference. We're here but a very, very short time. We are not here for a long time, folks. Use it the best you possibly can. And then pass it on to your children and to other people that it is so, so very important that they see what is going on. And now let's talk to that man who says the dark ages of America are really with us. And we have entered into that dark age, and we're on the verge of collapse. It is amazing. His name is Morris Berman. The name of the book, Dark Ages of America. Morris, nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Thanks, Mary Jane. Glad to be here. Incidentally, the book is called Dark Ages America.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Yep. I've been talking about you for a while.
Oh, okay. Now, okay, I'm in the middle of the conversation then.
Yeah, you kind of joined me. That's okay. That's a good thing. Now, what you actually liken it to the fall of the Roman Empire, in what ways? Give me some samples.
Well, you know, Mary Jane, this is a sequel book. This is a follow-up to a book I wrote in 2000, which is called The Twilight of American Culture. And it was that particular book, which came out 15 months before 9/11, that actually was a comparison of contemporary America and the late Roman Empire from the point of view of internal structural factors. And I talked about things like the gap between rich and poor and the lowering levels of education and intellectual awareness and things that had really, really finally done the Roman Empire in and were still happening, were now happening in a very dramatic way in the United States. And I basically said in that book, if these factors aren't addressed, it seems to me no way to arrest that downhill slide. But it's interesting because, as I said, it was published 15 months before 9/11.
Yeah.
And the one point of comparison between contemporary America and the Roman Empire, late Roman Empire, was one that I had missed entirely, and it was the most obvious.
What was
that?
But
once 9/11 occurred, you know, there it was. Rome was invaded.
Oh.
It was attacked from the outside by people they called barbarians. It was drawn into a very long, drawn-out war of attrition. It got into imperial overstretch, bankrupted its domestic economy, and finally lost. And once 9/11 struck, I mean, within 2 months, I had written the proposal for Dark Ages America, the sequel, because I saw that we were going to do all the things that Rome did.
Well,
it was very, very clear to me.
One thing that you point out that I am in such agreement with you, you say that there's an integration of religion versus spirituality. That's dangerous, isn't it?
An integration of religion and what?
And versus the integration of spirituality. In other words, religion over spirituality.
Right, but it's more a kind of religion as part of the state apparatus that has happened in the United States. And that was also present in the late Roman Empire. There really wasn't much separation. I mean, the whole Greek legacy of rational thinking had largely disappeared in favor of a kind of, you know, state religious apparatus, which is what we increasingly have today.
Right.
And the trouble with that is that if you're that committed to, you know, a faith-based policy, as our president likes to say, then you're not very committed toward reason and intellectual analysis. You know, it's kind of interesting. A couple of years ago, the New York Times reporter Ron Suskind interviewed a number of Bush policy advisors, and they told him that he, namely Suskind, was living, quote, in the reality-based community where solutions emerge from judicious study. And what they were saying to him was that this was a bad thing.
Really?
In other words, one senior advisor told Suskind, that's not the way the world works anymore. We're an empire, and when we act, we create our own reality. Well, we see how a faith-based reality is working out just about as well as it did in Vietnam, you know?
And there are so many other things that are going on, like, you know, the atrophy of education. That seems to be going down.
Well, you know, that's
thinking, God forbid, you should think positive, you know, think forward and have a mind of your own.
Well, you know, I have to say that that part of my research, Mary Jane, was the most difficult because in the sense that I couldn't believe what I was saying or what I was seeing in the research. I never imagined it was as bad as it is.
Right.
You know, more and more I was aware that if you went into a store and, you know, something cost $1.58 and you gave somebody a $10 bill, they didn't know what to do. You know, more and more I was seeing incidents like that. But when I did the research, it was really quite shocking, especially, I have to say, for our future. That is to say, for young adults in the 18 to 24 year-old age group. The surveys, which are conducted by places like the University of Connecticut, National Science Foundation, all that sort of thing, revealed that 87% of adults can't find Iraq or Iran on a world map.
Isn't
49% can't find New York State on a map of the United States. 29% can't find the Pacific Ocean. And hold your hat, 11% can't find the United States.
Oh, come on.
On a world map, 11% of that age group can't find the United States. I was teaching a few years ago. I mentioned this in the Twilight book.
Right.
I was teaching as a tutor, you know, in a school, and these were 17-year-olds. I would ask questions like, I would draw a rough map of the United States. I live in Washington, D.C. I would say, where are we? They would take the pencil and put it in the middle of the country. At age 17, these kids hadn't heard of the Atlantic Ocean. I don't mean they merely didn't know where it was. They had never heard of it.
Well, what have we done? Where did we go wrong?
Yeah, this is really the question. And it's not, part of the problem is that it's not about deliberate action as much as it is. I mean, this is really the theme of Dark Ages America, that structurally we wound up in a certain place because of the nature of our nation itself and how it played out in certain ways. I mean, we've always been a business civilization and a consumer society, and that was largely the motivation from the time of Thomas Jefferson on. I mean, with his election, that's the direction in which we turned. And after you do that for a couple of hundred years, I mean, at that time, Benjamin Rush, the Philadelphia physician, said of the Jeffersonian direction that this is not a good idea, and we're going to disintegrate, he said, in an orgy of self-interest. This is in the early 19th century. Well, he was about 200 years off.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But he's right. It happened.
Yeah.
But finally, if you turn everything into a commodity, including education...
If we have educational bankrupt, if we have education bankrupt, spiritual emptiness, critical thinking push off to the side, religion taking over, I mean, is there any way to fix it?
No, there isn't. This was set up very early on. That's the point. And, you know, there is no historical record, or certainly no empire or civilization I know of, which once it entered its declining phase, took stock of what was wrong and then turned around and did things differently.
So what do we have to hit rock bottom like a drunk and then build back up again?
Yeah, but, you know, an awful lot of alcoholics, Mary Jane, hit bottom on the other side of death.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening to us. It's not like there's a recognition, you know. I mean, I have to tell you, one of the most depressing things you can do as an author who is worried about the status of our country is do a lot of, I mean, I would recommend this to any author if you really want to get depressed, do a lot of interviews with very conservative radio stations. Boy, that'll teach you something.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because basically, you enter the Dark Ages when you have those conversations.
Well, that's called sheeple, and it's lack of responsibility. It's so much easier to let somebody else tell you and lead you by the nose that you make your own decision, because then you are responsible for what decision you make.
Yeah. I mean, it really is pretty terrifying, and I've seen that, you know, in order for progressive change to occur, you need a critical mass of people who, as you say, think independently, are fairly well educated, and are motivated to do something. I think we lost that critical mass a long time ago.
Morris, there are a few entities that are trying. I mean, why do you think I'm here on BBS Radio?
I appreciate that, and I think that's very important, and I go around the country giving talks. But I'm also, one thing I say when audiences say, well, that seems very bleak, I say, okay, show me the levers of power that could result in change. And because that's how change occurs.
Right.
Real power moves the situation around. You show me the levers of power and do not refer to the Democratic Party, which is a pale echo of the GOP and kind of a joke right now.
I think all the political parties are not going to help us to do anything.
I'm with you, kid.
I don't think there's one. One is not different from the other.
I call the difference between the GOP and the Democrats empire and empire light.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, what do the Democrats want that's fundamentally different? You know, slight redistribution of wealth, all that sort of thing. You know, I mean, I look at somebody like Bill Clinton. I don't understand this business of the great liberal. I mean, he kept the Iraq sanctions in place during his entire 8 years that resulted in the death of 500,000 Iraqi children.
But, Lori, again, it's power and money, money and power. They're interchangeable, and they have nothing to do with humanity.
No, not at all. And they certainly aren't. It's not about, you know, what individuals might want or any kind of different sort of thing. I mean, I remember during the Democratic primary in 2004, the only person that made any sense to me was Dennis Kucinich, you know. That was a platform I liked. Get out of Iraq, apologize for what you've done, start redistributing wealth, and so on and so forth. That's going to happen when pigs fly.
Yeah, and you know the other thing, too, what we lack in this country, which we had years and years and years ago, and it's called passion. You have to have a passion for something and believe in something, not just to get elected or to do fundraisers, but to really, truly, deep believe.
Well, you know, I have to tell you that when you talk with conservative radio stations, they have a lot of passion, and it's not about money. They really believe what they're saying, and they believe it very strongly, and it's that that makes that frightening.
Yeah,
because they're getting their way. I mean, they're overwhelming the country out of passion.
Morris, I disagree with you on one thing. It is not a deep-seated passion. It is a very superficial passion because they're told that's what they're supposed to believe.
I don't know, Mary Jane. I have to tell you, a lot of these people believe it quite fervently, as far as I can see. I mean, they're very energized by things like, you know, issues like abortion and so on. They are really energized by that. They're energized by the fact that we're going to shove democracy down the throats of the Iraqis. They're quite excited about it. They think it's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's scary to talk with those people because when I have those conversations in the back, I remember that line from, you know, William Butler Yeats about, which is Byzantium, the poem Byzantium, I think, when he talks about the worst are filled with passionate intensity.
You bet.
I really come across that, and it's quite scary. You know,
there's
no possibility of any fresh air coming in.
Where is the book available?
Dark Ages America is, you know, you can get it at your local bookstore, Barnes and Noble, Borders, that sort of thing. More information on my website, which is simply morrisberman.com.
Okay, that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
Okay,
and, you know, I do want to tell our listeners that Saturday, well, this is East Coast time. It would be 7 p.m. your time, Saturday night. C-SPAN aired a program I did a couple months ago.
Okay.
And if you want to access that, it's booktv.org. So although it was last Saturday night, I think they're going to rerun it, and then, you know, you can get a tape and stuff like that. It was a talk and discussion I did in a bookstore in Charlottesville, Virginia on May 19th.
I love it.
And I like the show a lot. I mean, I'm very glad that C-SPAN taped that particular one because it was one in which people were very, very worried. I mean, people in the audience stood up, and they were very concerned.
You bet. Morris, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
A pleasure, Mary Jane. Thanks for having me.
Open our eyes. Let's keep them open.
Okay.
Take care now.
Good luck to you.
You too.
Bye.
Again, that's Morris Berman and the website morrisberman.com. The name of the book, Dark Ages America. And I'm telling you, I kind of hope I disagree with him. I want to disagree with him so fervently because I don't want to think that this is the end, that there is the way to another means. But again, we have to believe, and we have to have that passion, and we have to have that inner spirituality that makes us believe. You know, hope is the dream. Doing is the way on Pop-Off. And yeah, we can evaluate where we are now, but I'm still a believer that we can make change. Talking about changes. Divorce, that's another big thing that we have in our lives these days. How can we change that? Wait till you hear this one. You begin to believe that those diamond rings don't mean much anymore. It's just kind of a decoration more than anything else, instead of a belief and a passion in what you feel is a partnership. Well, this is America's leading marriage and divorce coach. Millions of readers around the world get her advice at Ask the Divorce Coach columns at www.thedivorceforum.com. She's in a myriad of newspapers and magazines, from Fox News to Family Life magazine. Susan Allen tells it like it should be in 101 Divorce Secrets, A Survivor's Guide on Divorce, and The Merry-Go-Round, that's M-A-R-R-Y, Merry-Go-Round, on how to save your money, your sanity, and your life. Susan, we need lots of help.
How are you today?
Well, you know, I'm fine, but I just talked to Morris Berman, you know, Dark Ages of America. He feels we're like at the end. And then we see the divorce rate. It's, you know, at least 51, 52%, which means we have less than a 50-50 chance to survive.
Closer to 70%. If you're going to get depressed, get really depressed.
Really?
And, of course, the purpose is that it's always darkest before dawn, right?
Yeah.
We know that's true. And so there are...
I need the dawn.
There are people like me, I'm happy to say, and many, many people in the world today who are taking a look at what is missing in our intimate relationships and why the marriages are falling apart.
Okay, please, give me the why?
Well, there are three key causes. The first is that people never fell in love with unconditional love at all.
Mm-hmm.
That was never what they were doing. If you don't have unconditional love for yourself and for your partner, you know, just forget right now.
Oh, yeah, it's really, well, you know, I'll change him after we get married, or he'll do this after we get, no, I don't think so.
And even if it's true, like at my second husband, I said, you never snored before we were married. How is it possible that I can't get a decent night's sleep now that we're married? What happened? He said, oh, before we were married, I never really slept.
Oh, my God.
But you see, even in a case like that, if there was real unconditional love on my part for my husband. Yeah.
You're right.
So, okay. I mean, I'm very clear that unconditional love is number one. The second thing is, if people don't understand the different phases of love, it starts at dependency, need, control, support, intimacy, vulnerability, and then unselfconsciousness, which is unconditional love. If they don't understand the depths of these deep emotional connections humans make with each other, then they're not going to know that when they get really scared, they're almost at unconditional love.
Well, and everything changes. I mean, that first year and a half, that's romance, that's chemistry, that's, you know, bunnies.
Yeah.
You know, after that, it's got to settle in. You've got to like the person.
Mm. Well, I'm glad to see that you understand, because
I've been married 35 years, and I've been through the phases. And you know what? Thank God there are phases. I wouldn't want to have the same marriage at the beginning that I have now.
Exhausting.
You bet.
Yeah, really exhausting. Incidentally, the third cause of divorce is that there are actually four human thinking styles. And if you don't understand which yours is, and you don't understand which your spouse's is, and believing that one is right and one is wrong, you're never going to be able to get into that unconditional love feeling.
Isn't that a lack of communication? People don't talk enough before they get married. You know, it's all the romance and the flowers and the dinner, and we're going to get married and the beautiful wedding, instead of, listen, let's talk about some common things here. What do we want out of life? Do we want kids? What about careers? What about money? All these things should be discussed.
Yes, and I love what you said. I would say more important than communication is listening skills.
Yeah.
Really having that ability to understand what your boyfriend or girlfriend is saying to you and really hear it and let that person know that you've really heard it and ask for clarification.
Well,
maybe you didn't
believer.
Get it right, you know?
I'm a firm believer. We do not teach enough about relationships and marriage and children in high school and in college. You know, you need to be learning these skills. There are skills to having a marriage and keeping a marriage going.
You bet. And, of course, that's what my workshops are all about.
Yeah.
And I did one in June in Los Angeles, and I'm doing one in August in Marina Del Rey outside of Los Angeles, and I did one in Cape Cod about 10 days ago. So unless people can really be exposed to these new tools and these new skill sets, and everything I teach is based on quantum mechanics, because our understanding of the way the world works has shifted dramatically just in the last couple of years.
You bet. You know, it's amazing. I think probably one of the main reasons that I've been with my wonderful husband for 35 years is that the first year that we were married like 3 months, and he got sent to Vietnam, and we had to test immediately whether it was going to work or not.
Wow. How long was he gone?
A year.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And you know what? When he came back, it was almost as if he'd been gone the weekend and we just caught up on everything. We used to send each other tapes and talk about what we were doing, and we kept the conversation going constantly.
Beautiful. And, of course, that's when you say this, it sounds as if you have a warm intrapersonal thinking style, which would be consistent with being a talk show hostess, you know?
Yep.
And that's one of four human thinking styles. Clearly, your husband has a lot of that as well. Otherwise, you'd be sending him tapes, and he'd be receiving tapes.
There you go. Yeah, it just makes it beautiful, and the changes have been wonderful. I mean, again, I don't want that same boy I married 35 years ago.
Yes.
And I wouldn't think he'd want that little girl he married either.
No, I presume not, because we know that when they do want that little girl, they go out and get one.
Exactly. And then they don't know what to do with it once they get it.
Yes, tragically, you see a lot of enormously wealthy guys in New York, where I just was, and Beverly Hills, where I often am, trying to chase after, even if they've already married them, you know,
amazing,
these much younger women, and not enjoying their seniority in their life. They just made a...
Don't you think we make it too easy to get married and too easy to get divorced?
Certainly true. But, however, even if we make it difficult, without the new skills and tools, as you've described it, it's still going to be a problem.
Yeah, you're probably right. It just, you know, we license everybody for everything else, for all businesses, your doctor, lawyer, whatever, we give licenses. The license we give for marriage ain't very valid.
Yes, that's so true. That remember that we live in a country and we live in a world that is being run and managed from a political standpoint by people who are, in many cases, representing the average mind, not the great thinkers, not the Albert Einsteins or the Albert Schweitzers or the Mother Teresas, but the average thinker, because we like the idea that we live in a democratic society where we vote. And the countries that are not democratic, the people are getting in because of money and power, not because of humanitarian considerations.
Yeah.
And that's the real problem. Nobody, lately is getting elected to office because of humanitarian concerns.
No, not anymore. It's both the rich people, the ones that have a lot of money instead of a lot of spirit and spirituality.
For sure. And so, it's about those four thinking styles. The humanitarian is the upper right brain person who sees a world that works for everyone with nobody left out. And that's what I was hearing from you, that we really want to begin to offer our kids new tools. And that's why I work with so many families, where I'm actually teaching new skills to the parents and sometimes directly to the children, or at least knowing the parents are going to pass it on.
Now, you've got a website called thedivorceforum.com.
Mm-hmm.
And also your books, 101 Divorce Secrets and The Merry-Go-Round, which I love that name. Where can they get the books?
The books are on the website. And the most important thing that I offer is I offer a one-hour free telephone consultation to anyone who is seriously interested in considering a new way to live, whether it's because their relationship or marriage is in trouble or because they are contemplating divorce and want to use the Divorce Forum collaborative model, which saves an enormous amount of money and time.
How do they sign up for that?
Yeah, thank you. Or if they want to debate with me why what they're doing should be working perfectly and it's their spouse's fault, you know.
How do they sign up for that?
Thank you. My email address is Susan Allen at thedivorceforum.com.
At thedivorceforum.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's Susan Allen, A-L-L-E-N.
It's actually A-N, but it doesn't matter. We've got it set that no matter how they spell it, it will get to me.
Great.
As long as they get thedivorceforum.com correct.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I have clients all over the world now.
Fantastic.
People who are
you've got
either...
to come back and visit with us again. Take good care now, Susan.
Thanks, you too.
We need all the help we can get.
Have a wonderful day.
You too, my love.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Again, that's Susan Allen at thedivorceforum.com, and the site is thedivorceforum.com. Name of the book, The Merry-Go-Round. I love that. Being aware and prepare on Pop-Off. That's what it's all about. And we prepare for you every day on Pop-Off. Thank you so much for joining us on Pop-Off today. We'll be back with you tomorrow, I absolutely promise, and we'll bring you good, great guests, as we always do. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply. And above all else, you dare to dream.
trying to take away.